Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We begin with the overheated reaction to the President's gun control initiative from members of Congress and speak with Jonathan Lowy, the director of the Legal Action Project at the Brady Center to Prevent Gun Violence, to assess the chances of Congress passing any measures that would curb the epidemic of gun violence in America. Then, with the arrival of West African troops in Mali following a military deployment by the French, we will discuss an intervention that the West sees as a war against Al-Qaeda and Malians see as a war against the Tuareg. Ni Akute, an independent Africa policy researcher, joins us to discuss what is at stake in the region where an attempt by the Algerian military to rescue Western hostages taken in retaliation against the French resulted in many killed in the crossfire and some missing. Then finally, we'll be joined in the studio by three campaign finance reform activists who are part of this weekend's Money Out Voters In Day of Action that will take place in 76 cities and 33 states on the third anniversary of the Supreme Court's Citizens United ruling. Mary Beth Fielder, the founder of the Los Angeles Money Out Voters In Coalition, and Kai Newkirk, a founding organizer of 99 Rise, and Lauren Windsor, the host of The Undercurrent, a grassroots political TV web show on the Young Turks Network, will discuss the upcoming Day of Action. Joining us now is Jonathan Lowy, the director of the Legal Action Project at the Brady Center to Prevent Gun Violence. He leads a team of attorneys in providing pro bono legal representation to victims of gun violence. For over a decade, he has litigated lawsuits against gun manufacturers, dealers, and owners where guns have not been made, sold, or stored responsibly, as well as attacks on gun laws on Second Amendment grounds. He represented several victims of the D.C. area snipers who settled for $2.5 million against a gun dealer and manufacturer, the first case in which a gun manufacturer had paid damages for a criminal shooting resulting from alleged negligent distribution. And he represented two New Jersey police officers who recovered $1 million in a settlement against the dealer who sold the guns used to shoot them. Welcome to Background Briefing, Jonathan Lowy.
I'm happy to be here, Ian.
And Vice President today in the White House, speaking to 300 mayors, said he has no illusions about the fight ahead. Meanwhile, there's been some overheated, somewhat irrational statements from a lot of members of Congress. The passions on the anti-gun control side are quite palpable. Is there resolve on the other side that can at least match some of this passion?
There definitely is. I mean, I've been working for sensible gun violence prevention measures for 15 years now, and I've never seen the sort of commitment and dedication and demand for sensible measures, both in the public, where we've just had a huge outpouring of support, and on Capitol Hill. I was at a hearing on the Hill yesterday, and they literally did not have enough chairs to fit the members of Congress who wanted to be attending and just to be a part of a hearing discussing gun violence prevention measures. So I really think this time it's different.
Well, but there was a hearing that Nancy Pelosi held that was a Democratic caucus hearing. It wasn't an official congressional hearing because the Republican chairs of the relevant committees refused to hold hearings. So what hearing are you talking about?
You're exactly correct. I shouldn't have said hearing. It was the Democratic Party's version of a hearing. So it was not an official hearing. But what you saw was tremendous support among the Democratic caucus. And while I do understand that, of course, you will need some Republican support, at the end of the day, I really think it's going to be a untenable position for Republicans, particularly after Sandy Hook, to stand before their constituents come election time and explain why it was important for them to fight for the rights of felons to buy guns without a background check, or to fight for the rights of people to get AK-47s or 30-round ammunition magazines, which is what we will be debating. And I don't care what district you're in. I don't care how red it is. I don't care how many gun owners are there. Taking those arguments is a loser in America today.
Well, so far they have been a winning argument. The NRA has dominated and intimidated the Congress. They have continually told the world that they stand up for protecting the rights of law-abiding citizens, when behind the scenes, through their legislation like the Tihard Amendment, etc., they actually end up protecting criminals, because they prevent the ATF from tracking guns used in crimes. And a gun used in a crime is already bloodstained. That is not anything to do with law-abiding citizens, and yet law enforcement can't track these. So a lot of the initiatives that the president announced the other day were executive orders hoping to revive the ATF. I spoke yesterday with William Vizard, who was a special agent with the ATF, and I must say, Jonathan Lowy, he was pretty skeptical about the chances of getting anything through the Congress. So give me some good news.
Well, there's a few pieces of good news, and I'm realistic about it. I'm just optimistic. And one thing is, what we know for a fact now is that the NRA does not speak for gun owners. They don't even speak for their own members. 74% of NRA members support universal background checks. So now that is out in the open. And the NRA cannot deliver the votes that they say they do. We've also just gone through an election cycle where the NRA did spend millions of dollars, but over 99% of that money went to losing candidates. And they've had that sort of abysmal success rate for a number of election cycles now. And I think the message is setting in, that the NRA, they're speaking for a very vocal but very small minority and an industry. And I think that that's ultimately going to lead at least enough Republicans to get some of this legislation passed.
Well, Jonathan Lowy, they're both vocal and somewhat rabid. I mean, the commercial that they've made that attacks the children of the president and suggests that Obama is a hypocrite because his children are protected by the Secret Service and he's unwilling to have vigilantes in every school in America armed to protect school children. So that's, most people consider it beyond the pale, and it's always, there's always been understood in Washington that the families of the first family are off limits. And yet when they're confronted by it, the head of the NRA acts as though they haven't said it. I mean, they don't really come across very well, but apparently to their own audience, they do. I mean, there's a big disconnect here.
Well, I think a lot of what the NRA leader does makes sense if you understand that what they're trying to do is sell guns, and particularly given a declining percentage of the American people who own guns, what they're really trying to do is sell even more guns to people who already have a lot of guns. I mean, that's where a lot of the gun sales happen. I was speaking at a group, and a guy came up to me and said he had 10 assault weapons and was going to go out and buy 5 or 10 more. So they really are trying to appeal to a very, very small group to gin up sales, which will help the industry that they're trying to defend. But that's not a lot of votes, and that's why you see things like 74% of NRA members supporting universal background checks, majorities of NRA members supporting other sensible reforms. And that reality, I really do think, is setting in Congress.
Again, I'm speaking with Jonathan Lowy, the director of the Legal Action Project at the Brady Center to Prevent Gun Violence. And over the years, Jonathan, I've spoken to a number of members of your organization, including Paul Helmke, that used to head it up. And he was a former mayor of Fort Wayne, Indiana. And he had mentioned that the mayors in this country and the police chiefs in this country are the ones that are really fed up with the NRA because their police officers are being outgunned by criminals who have a free rein because the NRA prevents any sensible gun laws from restricting the sale of powerful military-style firearms. So what's happening with building that alliance? I mean, obviously the vice president had the mayors in the White House today. It's pretty easy to put two and two together there.
Certainly the mayors in huge numbers support sensible gun measures and been right at the forefront of this fight. And law enforcement also has been very involved, and I see them getting even more involved, particularly given the assault weapon legislation that's now on the table. Because as you say, in 1994, when there was a successful push for a federal assault weapons ban, law enforcement was front and center fighting for that because they are the responders who actually have to face those weapons out on the streets. And we've seen since the ban lapsed numerous cases where law enforcement officers have been gunned down. They've been outgunned by the criminals. And so I think in the coming days and weeks, you're going to see them stepping up even more prominently.
So, Jonathan Lowy, the president, when he made his announcement a couple of days ago with some of the families of the victims of the shooting in Sandy Hook, he closed the event by talking about the painting that a parent of one of the young kids that was killed had given him, and how it keeps reminding him. It's in his study, reminding him of this young life cut short and the life that she could have had, and he spoke with great eloquence and resolve, but he did say that it's really up to the American people ultimately. Because the thing that I find extraordinary about this is the NRA, for all of their bragging about their membership, they have roughly 4 million or less probably members, and that's basically about 1% of the entire population of America. So they are the 1%. What about the 99%? What is there any kind of coherent plan out there to organize them, or is it just the sort of ad hoc, the mayors and whatever else? And because I sense that there's not a lasting anti-gun constituency in this country, certainly not one with the passions that the pro-gun people have.
Well, I can tell you that at Brady, we've been fighting this fight for almost 40 years, and our major focus always has been, and certainly is today, to bring the voice of the American people to bear. We're not a collection of mayors who are great on this issue. We're not politicians. We are representing the voice of the American people, many of them victims of gun violence themselves. They've always been at the forefront of our organization and are today. And so that's really what we're about. That's where we see certainly one of our primary roles. We have a website, wearebetterthanthis.org, which brings together a lot of people, and we're going to be continuing to lead campaigns to make sure the public remains engaged on this issue, which I would tell your listeners is going to be a long fight. I mean, there's a short-term fight, and we certainly hope that we can pass some sensible legislation in the coming weeks or months. But that's not going to end gun violence in America. It's going to help end it. It's going to save lives. But this is a long struggle that we're going to have to be engaged in. And I really think that there's a new energy among the American people. I do think the Sandy Hook massacre was a tipping point, and I don't think we're going back.
Well, just in the last couple of minutes, Jonathan Lowy, the Ku Klux Klan were put out of business by the Southern Poverty Law Center through litigation. They found that was their Achilles heel, to sue them out of business. And Although the NRA is a noxious organization, I'm not suggesting it's the same as the Ku Klux Klan. However, is there a way, given that you have successfully sued on behalf of victims of the D.C. area sniper, who settled for $2.5 million against the gun dealer and manufacturer in that case, and then you also represented two New Jersey police officers who recovered $1 million in a settlement against the dealer who sold the gun that was used to shoot them. So is there any recourse, for example, for all the families of those children that were shot up by an assault rifle in Connecticut?
There may be, and I'm certainly, I'll be frank, I've talked to attorneys about that, and we always look at these sorts of cases. I represent, and we represent victims of gun violence across the country, and have for over 20 years. And that is another way to reform the gun industry. We bring cases to hold irresponsible gun companies accountable, to send a message to the gun industry. It's the way they do business. They do some outrageous things. Most gun dealers are responsible business people, but there are a few really bad apples. There's a case where we represent a young man who was shot with a gun that was trafficked because a gun dealer sold 87 Saturday night special handguns in one transaction, all cash. And what do you know? Those guns were not intended to defend the gun owner's family or household. They were going to be used to be sold on the streets to criminals. And we argued that was negligent, and that's in the courts now. It's the sort of thing that happens, which leads to gun violence in the criminal gun market. So that is an important part of the puzzle.
Well, but if the ATF were the shackles were taken off the ATF that the NRA through their representatives in Congress have put on the ATF, one of them is that the ATF can't monitor gun dealers. Once a year they can visit them. I mean, it's outrageous how little the very case that you're talking about. If the ATF were your ally in this and be able to track those guns, and because apparently it's only about 1% of the dealers, gun dealers out there that sell to criminals, most of the guns to criminals, I should say.
That's right. And in fact, 86% of gun dealers sell no crime guns. So it's very important that ATF have the powers of any other law enforcement agency. And because of the gun lobby's supporters in Congress, as you say, they're restricted in all sorts of ways. And Congress has also shielded the public and even public officials from getting full information about how gun violence is caused in this country. They've prevented CDC from studying gun violence as a public health problem. They've also prevented the public and public officials from getting crime gun data to see which gun dealers are supplying the crime gun market. These are restrictions that make absolutely no sense except to protect the worst of the worst in the gun industry. And the president proposed eliminating some of these. Congress can go farther, should go farther, sure, and eliminate all of them.
Well, I thank you very much for joining us here today, Jonathan Lowy.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Jonathan Lowy, the director of the Legal Action Project at the Brady Center to Prevent Gun Violence. He leads a team of attorneys in providing pro bono legal representation to victims of gun violence. For over a decade, he's litigated lawsuits against gun manufacturers, dealers, and owners where guns have not been made, sold, or stored responsibly, as well as attacks on gun laws on Second Amendment grounds. He represented several victims of the D.C. area snipers who settled for $2.5 million against a gun dealer and manufacturer, the first case in which a gun manufacturer manufacturer has paid damages for a criminal shooting resulting from alleged negligent distribution. He also represented two New Jersey police officers who recovered $1 million in a settlement against the dealer who sold the gun used to shoot them. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking about what's happening in Mali, and also we will look into the botched hostage rescue in Algeria.
He changed his clothes and shined his boots and combed his dark hair down, and his mother cried as he walked out, "Don't take your guns to town, son, leave your guns at home, Bill. Don't take your guns to town." He laughed and kissed his mom and said, "You're Billy Joe's a man.